West, Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the April 20th, 420 edition. Stay with Change from that famous, infamous, ancient, old-time Free Radio Santa Cruz Connected group. Just kidding. I wish they were. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, twice weekly civil rights show on Free Radio. And if you want to catch us in other cities, we stream on Free Radio Olympia times at 91.3 at up in Washington. Mojo Radio in Mendocino catches us at 87.9 FM on different occasions, and Free Radio Ashland. in Oregon at 87.9 FM. So if you're ever traveling through any of those cities and you feel the need to catch a little of the Santa Cruz scene, you might be able to by tuning in to the pirate stations up there. You can also catch us on the web at www.microradio.net/FRSC, www.microradio.net/FRSC. And if you miss any of the specifics here, like you actually want to write down these numbers, you can always call our voicemail, 427-4523, 427-4523 for free radio. The studio line, however, if you want to be a part of the dialogue today, and it's 3.5 hours coming up, a little bit less actually, I'm a bit late, it's 427-FRSC, or 3772, 427-3772 if you want to call in and be a part of the show, which I encourage you to do, because it's the dialogue that makes the show a lot of the times, although I do put out some interesting information, if I do say so myself, I think. But you've got interesting information, too, and stuff that I don't know about. So call in, 427-3772. And you can comment, too. We get into our wrangles. We have our differences of opinion. We have strong arguments. That's fine. That's what it's all about. That's what we need to do to come up with some, to come to some conclusions on both sides. It's a continuing debate. A lot of people have different views. Let's hear them. Snail mail here, in case you want to send something to Free Radio Santa Cruz, maybe a check, maybe an old VCR. We have no VCR anymore in the studio, and apparently I'm one of the few broadcasters, if only the only broadcaster, that uses a VCR. I need it in order to replay the council sessions. I record them on tape, and then I can play selected portions of our exciting Santa Cruz City Council meetings for you. I know that's probably at the bottom of the hit parade, but it also is important to know at different times and to follow and to study and all that sort of thing. And can't play that on the air without a VCR, and our VCR has gone kaput. So if anybody has an old VCR that they want to contribute to the station, if you're interested in hearing what actually is happening at these shitty council meetings, if you will, if you'll forgive my adolescent approach to the city council at times, you can send in the VCR, or you can actually call us, and, you know, I'll come pick it up and get it to the station. It's 427-4523 voicemail. Or you can you can send it in, and plus the money to buy a new VCR, perhaps. Free Radio Santa Cruz, P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Again, Free Radio Santa Cruz, Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz, 95061. Checks should be made payable to Free Radio Santa Cruz or FRSC. Or you can always just deliver the cash in unmarked bills, preferably. So give a call to 427-3772 if you want to be part of today's show, and you'll have a lot of time to make up that your mind on that decision. We're going to be here for a while. Got stuff ranging from medical marijuana, it is 420 after all, to repression in Santa Cruz. It's also Hitler's birthday, for those of you who have forgotten. You got to mark that on your calendar, folks. April 20th, the Führer's birthday. Not sure when Bush's birthday is, and he is, of course, our current Führer. We don't wish to, you know, slight him. He is the Führer. And, of course, then we have the Führer of Santa Cruz, Mayor Emily Riley, who, while she has less immediate power, still kind of goes along with the party line at City Council, and that's important to be aware of. Of course, if you try to give her a salute, a fascist salute at City Council, you may find yourself hustled off to the Huskow, but that's all kind of in keeping with the nature of the regime here in Santa Cruz. Actually, they haven't tried that since they arrested me in March last year when they found, A, the charges didn't stick, and, B, they were subject to a lawsuit. No, that lawsuit was derailed by a strange granting of what's called a summary dismissal by the federal judge, Robert White. I believe that it's going forward on appeal, and we'll see what's happening with that. And I'll give you the information as soon as I have it from attorney David Beauvais of Berkeley, who's carrying on that lawsuit. Not just on behalf of me. I mean, it's not a question of being able to make what some regard as an outrageous gesture, what some regard as a quite appropriate gesture at City Council. It's a question of free speech. It's a question of the right to confront the legislative body that is supposed to represent you here in Santa Cruz, and of course is not. It represents the entrenched institutions, the staff, the people with money, the people in positions of power, the people who are in positions of political influence. So keep your eye on Indie Media. That's a good place to check for updates on this, because I do post updates there. And, of course, you can listen to this station and my show, which is every Sunday from 9:30 to 1, and every Thursday from 6 to 8 in the evening here on 96.3 FM. But the Indie Media website is another good website. I always give it out. Those of you who already know it, of course, use it, I'm sure. For those of you who don't, grab a pencil. It's not hard to remember, but you might want to jot it down. It is www.santacruz, small letters, one word, santacruz.indymedia, like, you know, Indiana Jones, Indymedia, indymedia.org. And that's a great website for local information about protests, about police misconduct, about, a lot of debates go on that website. Some of them pretty harsh. I've been trashed on there recently. Robert Norris is a phony is one, heading that is was a discussion, not much of a discussion, actually. I mean, I certainly appreciate a critique. I don't appreciate, but I will respond to, I guess I appreciate a critique of my record in terms of what I do and don't do and how successful are activities that I've been involved in and the kinds of critiques I offer. It's appropriate to make those kinds of criticisms public. When it gets down to personal attacks, of course, and by that I mean, you know, your ancestry, your parents, your sexual habits, whatever you will. I mean, that's getting kind of grubby. I don't do that. Well, I do, however, attack politicians quite clearly, such as Riley and Porter and Wormhout and Laird and you name it, you know, all the way up to Bush, who are abusive of the public, not to mention genocidal in their use of whether it's pepper spray locally or DU weapons in Iraq. We need to stand up and just say no and say so loudly and clearly, even if it offends local Democratic Party hacks or Green Party wannabes like Fitzmaurice, who used the Green Party to get elected and then abandon the principles. It's around the homeless, at least, around the police and community control of police that the Green Party stands for. And the fact that Green Party right-wingers won't do anything about this or, you know, continue to support these political hacks is not... should not dismay us or discourage us. That's traditionally what happens. You get people develop their constituencies, and they have them. So in order to oust the old regime, you've got to keep working at it. Old regimes have got to go when they are repressive and abusive. And, you know, the one good thing that the U.S. military did in Iraq was get rid of the Hussein regime. I'm not going to deny that. I think it's good that regime went. And I think everybody's glad it's gone. The problem, of course, is that the cure may be, in some sense, worse than a disease. You have American occupation forces, which, maybe they'll be easier to get rid of than Hussein. Who knows? I mean, you may have all the Arab surrounding countries have already asked that these U.S. troops, actually, it's more than asked. It's more like demanded that they get out of there. So that's coming up. I'm going to be doing some analysis of the latest war news and the latest anti-war news. That'll be coming up. And I'm also intending today to do an analysis of how to deal with a bust, particularly a shocking bust. That is to say, we're actually going to use my arrest. It's actually a non-custodial arrest. The officer insisted it was a detention, but it wasn't. It was an arrest because I was issued a citation, and I was not free to leave. And how can one deal with it? What kind of options does one have when a police officer comes up to you on the mall and says, "Hey, you, you know, what can you do?" And I'll give you my opinion. And again, I'm not an attorney. I'm just a sort of a long-term skirmisher with the police around issues of civil rights locally as we've attempted to secure, restore, and gain rights for poor people, whether you want to call them homeless or nomadic or houseless, whatever you will. Or just people, ordinary folks who are on the mall trying to use the public spaces and suddenly finding that the merchants get the dibs and the police are their private security guards. That is really a serious issue here in Santa Cruz, as it is in numerous other cities and towns, as the gentrification monster continues to gulp up civil rights and public spaces. If you're interested in joining me, 427-3772 is the number. You can also try reaching me on the Internet at rnorse, R-N-O-R-S-E, at hotmail.com. That's a possibility. I'm going to be checking about every hour, or not as frequently as I might be, so it's easier to catch me by phone. But if, for example, the phone is occupied, you can try the email and then get back to the phone. We only have one phone line coming in here, so you got to call and call and call and call until you get in. We had an interesting session last week. As you may remember, Joe Williams and Mike Rotkin sparred out on the issue of representative. Is he a representative? Who knows? Sam Farr, 17th Congressional District, a member of the House of Representatives, who surprised and pleased a lot of us by voting against Bush's $63 billion military appropriation out of, I guess, a $75 billion appropriation total, the emergency supplemental appropriation, but then dismayed us and actually confirmed those of us like myself, the cynics among us, if you will, or the old hard-boiled realists watching, depends on how you want to view it, by voting, by not voting in the final vote when the issue came back to the House floor a week ago, the supplemental appropriation, the final voice vote. Farr did not vote. So he didn't vote against it on the final vote, though he did vote against it on an earlier vote. So what he really needs to do is to be told by his constituents, hundreds of them, preferably, in his office, singing in tune, "That ain't the way to go there, Sam. That's not what we're all about." And you can actually have a chance to talk to Farr. He is coming back to town on the 23rd. That's Wednesday. That's the day after tomorrow at the Veterans Hall. I guess it's at 7 o'clock. I've got to check to be sure, but I believe that's when it is. Public meeting. Now, then will be the time to tell him, "What the fuck, if you'll excuse me for saying so, are you doing, Representative Farr? Why are you voting for war, or why are you not opposing the war?" And you can pose that same question to the Santa Cruz City Council and those good council members who postponed the anti-war resolution, first from Monday to Tuesday. Actually, they postponed it. On March 19th, Riley postponed the entire meeting. She didn't postpone it. She canceled a town hall meeting that was scheduled at the Civic Auditorium until early April. And actually, she didn't postpone it. She just rescheduled it suddenly in early April when people were getting a little uncomfortable about all those Iraqi civilians being killed as the U.S. troops poured into Iraq. Then at the town hall meeting a week ago, on Monday, that she tried to put forward a resolution but was thwarted by Councilmember Scott Kennedy, who insisted they couldn't pass a resolution because he wanted a unanimous resolution, and he wanted that to be when there were at least 7 council members there, and there were only 4. So the next day at City Council, it was thwarted again, this time by City Attorney John Barisoni, supposedly, but I think that there was some pressure put on by Kennedy, frankly, and I'm speculating here. Scott can call in and correct me if he'd like to correct the record, but of course he hasn't done so far, so I don't know what to say. That they postponed it. Porter wanted to get a vote on it within 2 days, but Riley and the others and Porter finally too decided, well, we'll wait 2 weeks because Scott Kennedy's going to be out of town for 10 days and we want him to be in on the final vote. Well, here we are 2 weeks later, and coming up on Tuesday, what do we find on the agenda? Nothing. N-O-T-H-I-N-G. Nothing about the war in Iraq. Nothing about an anti-war resolution. Nothing about U.S. troops out of Iraq. Apparently, it's now a non-issue for the Santa Cruz City Council. Are you surprised? I'm not. This is a council that surfs the political ocean, so to speak. They surf their own form of the political net. It's a heady issue in the media, then you might get something from them. But, you know, when the Republicans and the major Democrats say the war is over, well, Emily Riley goes back to simply, you know, day-to-day harassment of homeless people on the mall. She doesn't do that personally, of course. Her police take care of that. And she, of course, would claim that she's simply making it a more decorous downtown, or maybe that's Ed Porter's line. In any case, they go back to business as usual, which is business as usual, and leaving things to the staff and the Redevelopment Agency and the Public Works Department and all these agencies that have no public oversight or meaningful public input, that present their reports that get rubber-stamped by the City Council with virtually no debate. They actually get stuffed on the consent agenda and rammed through. We try to pull them off. We ask for FYIs. We get nothing. So there is nothing on the war coming up on Tuesday. No resolution that the U.S. troops should get out of there. And that's why I think people should show up en masse, either at City Council on Tuesday, which is always a real pain in the ass to go to City Council, but the evening session, you might be interested, I don't know. I'd like to hear if people are going. If you think you're going to City Council, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and also my voicemail, 423-4833. Or let me know on the air what you think about this idea. The other thing you can do is forget about City Council, go directly to Farr, who has a vote in the Congress and apparently chooses not to use it. He hasn't voted against uranium-depleted weapons. He hasn't voted against cluster bombs. He hasn't voted to withdraw the troops from Iraq. He's, you know, He's the Laird, Wormhout, Riley kind of politician. One might even say the Fitzmaurice kind of politician. I haven't heard too much dissent from council member and poet laureate Timothy Fitzmaurice either. Maybe I sound a little cranky about these folks. I am cranky. I think these people have a responsibility that they are shirking, and that we the community have a responsibility to hold them to their responsibility. So let's get in there and do so if we can. In the meantime, if you've got other subjects that I'm not covering, and I'm sure there are many of them that concern poor and homeless people, civil rights on the streets, who knows, maybe even a spare additional topic or two, but that's my main focus. 427-3772 is the number to call, 427-FRSC. Give a call to the station, and we'll be talking about it. I'm also going to be playing, I think, a bit of, what do I have here? We may go back to, what we're going to do is play a little of the last city council meeting, which was a week ago Tuesday, which some interesting things happened. Unfortunately, the quality of this tape is not terribly good. The better quality tape, as I mentioned, is the VCR recording that I have been using the audio track off that, but unfortunately, as I said, the VCR has gone to the happy wrecking ground, or the landfill, wherever it's gone, so we ain't got no VCR here, and we can't do that, so... I want to thank, by the way, Skidmark Bob for all his work in keeping these things running, and Vinny and all the other people, Ian, the folks who keep things going at this station, and there are a lot of them. I can't name them all. I don't remember everybody's name, but I mean, there's a regular core at Free Radio that it goes regularly to the Free Radio Collective meetings that I don't. I can't stand meetings generally, except of course those I'm running. it takes work keeping the station going, and it takes funding, and it takes equipment, and it takes some courage, because we are an unlicensed station in the middle of an Ashcroftian regime. Keep that in mind, folks. This station could go off the air at any point, and we are still encouraging you to be aware of that. We had a kind of an emergency alert, if you will, our own red, yellow, orange, green, purple chartreuse alert here at Santa Cruz, Free Radio Santa Cruz, back, I guess, 8 months ago, when there were busts of stations in other places. Berkeley got busted, actually, Free Radio Berkeley, or actually Berkeley Liberation Radio. Free Radio Berkeley went off the air in 98. And they're back on, by the way. Liberation Radio is back on. But we were concerned for a while that they were going to come after us, and that's always a concern, though we keep this station's location a secret, theoretically, it's not hard to find us if you want to triangulate us, or if you're one of the hundreds of people who've been to our studio, and, it's not like it's a major secret, so we are, to some extent, we live because the community would object if we were shut down. That's you out there. And in order for that to continue, you have to be prepared to object if they come after us. So please, put a special place in your schedule for rushing down to the Free Radio station, which we will tell you about, if they will try to tell you about, if if they start breaking down our door and coming in. And I don't want to seem like an alarmist, but in the middle of Patriot Act 1, Bush's preemptive wars, and Patriot Act 2, it is not so far-fetched an idea. And it has happened to other stations in Austin, in Miami, in other places throughout the country, in Berkeley, So be ready to support your Free Radio station, and in the meantime, support it as best you can with whatever you can provide. We provide you with the kind of news and local information you're not going to get anywhere else. KUSP, KZSC, KSCO, gag me. Yeah, you get your occasional good program on there, but not with the kind of regularity that you come to expect from Free Radio. So this is kind of the non-commercial, but I think it has to be said, and I'm saying it. So there you have it. Okay, well, we're approaching 10 o'clock here, according to the studio clock, and I guess what I'm going to do is give you a little bit of Phil Oakes. I usually do that, old Phil. And then we're going to get to the somewhat grubby recording of the last city council meeting, some of the highlights, or lowlights, if you will. And hopefully some words from you as to what you think is important, or what's going on out there in the community that we should know about, announcements about upcoming events that you think should be made here on the air. And I will also give you an update on Jason Pascal, the Reverend Doctor downtown, African-American, who has been and is currently languishing in jail thanks to Sergeant Baker and the local gentrification squad downtown. We actually have a call before we go into our music. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hey there, Tom. What's happening?
False, but you always ask for calls, but you always give me short shrift.
Oh, not always. I gave you long shrift last time.
Oh, no. Well, long shrift for what you normally give me.
What, 12 minutes? That's pretty long.
Oh, no. I never had 12 minutes.
I'm timing you now. Go ahead. We'll see how much time I give you.
Anyway, you know, when you keep going after the city council, it reminds me of the old joke about the guy that... the guy that's looking for something, and Fred comes up and he says, "I dropped my keys. I dropped my keys somewhere." And Bella says, "Well, where did you drop them?" And he says, he points way over some other place. And he says, "Well," he says, if you dropped them over there, why are you looking over here?" And he says, "Because the light's better over here." And that's what I keep thinking of that analogy whenever. Whenever you go after guys like Sam Farr and the city council and so on for not doing something about the war, it seems as though it's a way of working out our helplessness about doing anything about the war, that we keep pounding on people who also don't, I mean, they don't do anything about the war, but you don't expect them, I don't expect them to do anything about the war, and I wonder if you really do in your heart of hearts, or if it's not just a matter of turning the heat on them.
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you're really, in a way, you're right. I don't expect them to do anything. Although, frankly, when enough pressure is put on them, they do something. For example, Farr changed his vote when enough of us began to show up at his office regularly and began to put the pressure on him. But, I mean, I think your point, which you made last week, too, is, if I'm not mistaken, well taken, which is that it's the institutions we're concerned about, really, not the individuals who occupy the places in that sense. And I think that's, you know, if that's the criticism you're making, is that the criticism you're making?
Well, I'm you know, it's not only that, you know, you say, well, we work, and then Farr changed his vote, and then what happened? I mean, how did Farr changing his vote make anybody, maybe people here felt a little sense of accomplishment, but it really didn't help much, did it?
No, it didn't.
And so, I mean, it seems to me that what we're all more interested in, should be more interested in doing is in addressing ourselves to how the hell, which is you know, and it's a hell of a question, but how the hell to be effective in our own, you know, in our, how to be empowered and effective in our own persons without slamming the so-called representative government that we know doesn't represent us. I mean, that's the basic issue, isn't it? That they don't represent us. Neither are in Congress, nor on the city council, nor anywhere. So we have to find some way where we aren't working with representatives. We're working directly in some way with the material.
No, I agree with you, but I think to some extent one way to do that is to expose this by pressuring the representatives and showing how, you know, in fact, A, they don't respond. B, when they do respond, it's not enough. And see, even when they make responses that are positive responses, they're overruled by other agencies and then don't respond to that. So I think the main thing is for the community to talk to itself, if that's what I think. And that's what I'm doing here on the air. And in a way, the city council, Farr, the Sentinel, whatever, these you know, establishment groups are simply a focus for people to get together and sort of unite and see a sense of their own power. And I don't know, and there are probably better places to do this, and I'm always open to suggestion. Any suggestions?
I'm not sure that, I mean, I think that we just have to get away from the idea that anything that's going on in this government really represents us, that we have to find some way to act directly. And you know, in other words, make our own justice in the courts and so on. I'm on to this extraordinary book which I just started called Cracking the Code, and what that does in the most amazing way is to show not only the how we got to this situation where we're living in a society that is so different from the society we think we're living in, but also how to get free of that. And unfortunately, it has to be done, you know, one person declaring her independence at a time. But it can be done, and this book is the first one that's really, you know, that I know of that's really...
Who's the author, Tom?
Well, there is... There is no author. It's called Cracking the Code.
Where do you get it online?
And well, you get it. Let me see. It's you. Just a moment, Robert. I'll get you the phone number because I have a phone number which is a message number.
Sure, and I'll talk about this while you're doing that.
Okay.
I know that what we've also talked about before, what this caller has brought up is how to deal with issues in the courts and citizen sovereignty and things of that sort. I frankly think the courts are an even worse and less hopeful avenue than the legislature, though I continue to use the courts. I'm going to court on Wednesday. I'm going to be indicted for trespass, and I've got jaywalking tickets and other kinds of tickets, and I support people fighting their sleeping tickets and their chalking tickets and everything they can. And I think that's, again, I think that there's a variety of avenues of pressure, both to ameliorate things in the short run, to bring people together who need to be talking to each other, and then ultimately to make some fundamental changes. That's the theory I have.
Well, you see, I mean, the thing is, Robert, that what we all thought, because I've been at this for a number of years, and the group that calls themselves the Patriots, I'm not in love with that name, but anyway, there are people, and we've been discovering bits of the puzzle here and there and everywhere. But the basic, and finally, this book really, I think it deserves its name completely, because Cracking the Code is the Uniform Commercial Code, and the trouble in the courts, the reason that what we, quote, try to do in the courts never works, and why we're always being beaten, is that we're arguing the wrong law. We go in there with the Constitution, the common law, with our sense of what's right in the courts and so on. And these guys, these aren't even judges. These aren't judicial judges. They're administrative law. They're administrators, basically, acting with that hat on. And what they're doing is administering contracts in commerce. That's all that these... Everything that apparently goes on in the courts is actually a contract in commerce, mm-hmm. and it's much too complicated for any of us to understand, even at the end of the line, but certainly at this stage of the game.
Well, you know, Tom, again, I'm interested in specifics, although I don't want to spend a lot of time on the specifics, frankly, on the air. I mean, perhaps off the air. But, you know, the courts are an even worse venue to try to mobilize people and to protect your rights. I mean, in some senses they do. I mean, there have been some historical advances through the courts, but I think that these have fundamentally been prepared for in the streets before they hit the courts. Whether it's the union organizing of the 30s or the black civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s, I think those who think that all you got to do is come in with this incredible secret code deal where you can argue effectively in court and you'll win your case because no one's ever realized this particular loophole before, I think that these folks are deluding themselves. Again, I want to see some evidence locally of success.
Okay,
that's what I want to see.
Well,
before we go into details about how to do it, I want to see somebody do it, and then I'll be happy to have you on the air, and we can talk about it.
Okay, well, that's fine, but it involves a little work, and I'm telling you that the understanding, first of all, it is not a loophole. Secondly, when I say you're arguing that a different law, you go in, you argue the Constitution, it's as if you went in under the Napoleonic Code and argued Anglo-Saxon common law. It's a completely different...
But whatever you're arguing, Tom, I mean, and I'm interested, I want to see you do so successfully and then come back and say, this is what you do. In fact, I would even be willing to talk to you off-air if I can be helpful.
You accept a book in lieu of that? I'm not going to go and do it successfully because I don't need to do it successfully. I'm already where I want to be, except for the actions that are suggested by this book that I'm taking. And at that point, I'm going to be independent, and any cop will approach me at
their peril.
At their peril, exactly.
Right. Well, I mean, I know that when you effectively
how to do it, and you can read them.
When you effectively stand up for your rights, I've seen this with Richard Quigley, and to some extent, it's true with me as an individual. in some jurisdictions, police are more reluctant to approach you. In others, they'll just come and beat you up more easily. I mean, it depends, I guess, on where you are. We're in Santa Cruz, and that's where I'm broadcast from. That's where you're talking from, and that's where it's relevant. By the way, we've been going on for about 10 minutes. I have been timing this, so not cutting you off, but I am trying to engage in a dialogue here. And what I'm saying again is discussing these theories, because that's what they are right now, of how to effectively...
I'm sorry. I mean, you've said this without even looking at the book.
No, I haven't looked at the book. It's true.
No,
so
there will be accounts in the book, not only of what's really going on, which you really need in order to be able to discuss it intelligently.
Right.
And of what's really going on, where it goes to in the history and so on.
Right.
We're talking about a web of deceit, which is so far beyond the understanding of any reasonably honest...
Why don't you give the phone number, Tom, of the book, and people who are interested can take a look at it. Maybe I can take a look at it at some point in the future.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. I hope you can.
Yeah. I'm not opposed to that.
The phone number... Okay, but you are opposed to understanding what...
I'm opposed to spending more than 12 minutes on this issue, yes. I am. It's true.
Why?
Because I have other issues that I think, actually, I have been getting somewhere with that have had some impact on the streets that I want to pursue. They may seem picayune and minuscule, but they are things I want to get into.
No, they're not picayune and minuscule.
Well, sometimes I feel they are. You know,
question how successful you are at what...
And that's a completely legitimate question.
I've heard you saying the same thing now for over 10 years, and basically... We're always at the same point. So excuse me for doubting that what you're talking about is very...
I have no magic solutions, no question about it.
You've got no magic solution, but one of your solutions is not to listen to anything that even claims to be a solution.
I don't want to spend a lot of airtime on theoretical legal stuff.
What you want to spend is on what we've already spent much, much...
I'll tell you what let's do.
Hours of airtime.
Tom, in the next 2 minutes, if you want to summarize more or less what you think are the salient points people should be aware of and give the phone number, that's fine.
Robert, I'm just not going to be hustled like this, damn it. 818, what I'm talking about is incredibly complex, incredibly important, and I'll give you the number, and you can just check on it yourself.
All right, hang on. Let me get a pencil.
It's listening.
Okay, 818.
818-754-8611. You can leave a message at that number.
One more time, 818.
818-754-8611.
And the name of the book is?
You leave a message. The book costs, $125, and in my opinion, and with $8 shipping and handling, and in my opinion, is worth every single cent of that.
Well, maybe we should pirate a copy of the book so it's available to the public for less than $125. Probably can copy it for about $20.
Maybe you can. I have a copy, but I don't think I think that these people are doing honest work, and certainly it took many decades of work to get this.
Well, I think if their objective is to change things, they want their information as widely spread as possible. If their desire is to make profit, then they're going to continue to sell their book to a limited audience. You know, I found the same problem with Ray Gordon and other constitutionalists who didn't want to put out their information in flyer form so it was free and available to the community. They wanted to hold fancy, expensive seminars. And I'm sorry, I'm not into that. I'm really not.
Okay, I put out mine in flyer form and got absolutely nowhere.
And I thank you for that. We're not getting nowhere, but for putting out your stuff in flyer form.
Legal defense for the homeless, which would have worked in almost any court, I mean, that I can think of, and so on. In any case, it would have worked. And it was a one-page thing. I put it out at my expense, handed it out on two occasions and several things and a couple of times to you, and never heard of it again. So, you know, it wasn't tried. It wasn't... I even went to court recently with you and was told when I asked questions that bore on this issue, I was told by you, this is the way things are done. Of course this is the way things are done, and this is the way we keep losing.
Okay, summarizing for that legal defense, Tom, it is what?
What the
one-page flyer you handed out?
That the page that I took, I called it. I just wrote at the top of the thing, legal defense for the homeless.
Right, and what does it involve?
It involves going to court and asking the courts very politely, certain questions which put the court in an untenable position.
Oh, about their jurisdiction and the fringe on the flag and things of that sort?
No fringe on the flag.
Okay, the jurisdiction of the court?
But basically asking what is the nature of the law under which I'm being attacked. And since the only nature of the law is statutory code, administrative law, and so on, there is no way
okay,
to defend.
Tom, I've got something for you here. Why don't you be the defendant coming into court? I'll be the judge. We'll do a little exchange right now.
Okay.
Go ahead.
One moment. First of all, I can read you the whole thing.
Well, rather than read it, let's do it in a sort of in a dramatic way, so people can see how it would work.
Well, I mean, this is a dramatic way.
I mean, go ahead. You're okay, Mr. Tom. You're in court here. Please step up to the. You're charged with sleeping between the hours of 11 and 8:30. How do you plead?
First of all, Tom they'll say is the defendant here, probably.
Right, we're looking for case 434254, Mr. T.
I understand that you're not the defendant. You say, are you talking to me?
Are you the defendant, sir?
Are you talking to me?
I don't know. Are you the defendant?
Just a moment. I gotta get a little information. I'd be happy to do this with you, but
okay.
I want to get the dialogue.
All righty. So we are about to have a dialogue about a method of defense of tickets in court. If you are ticketed for, let's say, sitting on the sidewalk, ticketed for sleeping outside, if you are ticketed for jaywalking, if you are ticketed for chalking on the sidewalk, here's an approach that this caller suggests may be effective in dealing with that issue. And we're waiting for him to come back.
Yeah, I'll be.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. If you want to call in after this caller, the phone number to call is
427-3772. Okay, I think you'll see this is just as clear. In fact, will be clearer.
No, I don't want you to read it. I want to do it. I don't want reading. I want to do it.
Because
you're the defendant, sir. Please, how do you plead? I mean, are you the? I'm looking for Mr. T here. Are you in court?
What's your name? Is that what the judge would say?
I will. So you walk up. You've walked up to the judge, right?
I don't walk up to the judge. I don't do anything.
Okay, so you're
calls the name of a case.
Okay, so I've called the case numbers. Mr. T, case number 467. Mr. T, case 467. Okay, issue a bench warrant for Mr. T, case 467. Next case. That's what they'll do.
No. They won't. I'm sorry. They won't do that.
How many times have you been to court, Tom, and seen these cases?
You, Mr. Key, I've been more times than you have, Robert.
I don't think so.
More times than you have, and defending myself all the way up to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, so please don't tell me I haven't been in court.
No, I know you've been in court, but I'm saying in local courts, if there is no response to the case, they will issue a bench warrant. That's what they do.
I want to try to open your mind to something that is so... I'm telling you, it's incredible.
Right. Well, I think we
it is incredible.
It's 20 minutes now, and I really got to roll on this one, Tom.
No,
I'm willing.
Not.
What? I'm willing. I am willing to do this with you, but you have to. I mean, we've done a little role playing right now, and right now you've got a bench warrant.
Look, you can decide. You can decide what the. At present, I assure you that what I'm about to read is much more accurate in terms of what happens in court.
Well.
And this is what is proposed. I'm reading.
Tom, you're filibustering. You're not reading. I thought we had an understanding here about what's going on.
The judge says, "What is your name?" The sovereign says, "No, it is not."
Don't read it to me. Do it. If you can do it, you can do it. Why can't you do it?
I'm doing it. Damn it!
You're not doing it.
For Christ's sake, I am.
No, you're not.
Robert, for Christ's sake, I'm doing it. I'm trying to tell you something, and you're just completely.
Look, I'm the judge.
What?
I'm the judge, and I say...
You're the judge, but you don't understand shit, you know? I mean, you ask me what my name is.
No. Tom, what I said was, I said...
Let me explain something to you.
No.
The only way that this government has any effect over any of us is as a corporate entity.
Okay, we're gonna have to close this down pretty quick, but what I'm saying to you is this.
Robert, are a corporate entity. I am a corporate entity.
Excuse me. Tom, you're not helping. This is not helping. The situation is this.
I'm not listening, for Christ's sake. It would help if you did.
No, the theory does not help. What helps is seeing the practice.
It's not a theory. It's a fact. and it's what it's,
there's no need to shout, Tom. Take a breather. Come on.
No, listen, come on, man. I mean, you're really just. I mean, it's impossible. You really don't want to hear.
No, what I want you to do is I want you to discipline yourself to say to me, "I'm a defendant in court, and this is how it would work." Not how somebody writes about it on a piece of paper.
I'm not talking about how somebody writes about it, but you.
Good. All right. I'm the judge. We'll try one more time.
Understand a few things.
I'm going to try one more time, Tom. Here, I'm the judge, and I say. Case 464352, Tom R. Are you in court, sir? Is a Tom R. case 123457 in court? Okay, issue a bench warrant for Mr. Tom R. Next case, John J. That is what they do in Santa Cruz court, okay?
Okay, then let's go on. Now,
okay.
Now a bench warrant has been issued.
Okay, bench warrant is issued. Police officer comes up to you, sir. Can I see your ID? You have a bench warrant out for you. I'm afraid we're going to have to take you into custody. Or perhaps you would like to sign.
Wait a minute. I haven't copped to being Tom R.
Oh, okay. Can I see some ID, please? Can I see some ID, please? Sir?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am.
What?
Sir, I need to see some ID here. Can I see some ID, please? Sir, I need to see some ID. Okay, I have to call my sergeant. Sergeant comes. Excuse me, sir. You have some ID on you? Uh-huh.
Talking to me?
Yes, sir. So you're choosing to say nothing. Sir, unless you identify yourself, I'm afraid we're going to have to...
You know who I am.
Sorry?
You know who I am.
No, we don't. We want to make sure we know who you are. You appear to be an individual who's committed a crime.
Why has a bench warrant been issued? Without knowing, if you know who I am.
We think we know who you are, but we want to be sure. We don't want to make any mistakes, sir.
If you don't know who I am, why aren't you bringing me into court?
Well, sir, if you don't show us some ID, I'm afraid I'm going to have to charge you with obstructing an officer and take you into custody. Very well. Sir, put your hands behind your back. You're under arrest. We're taking you to court for obstructing an officer. Anything you say may and will be held against you. You have a right to have an attorney present. And step over to the squad car, please. At which point they do that. They don't wait for you. They take your hands, they handcuff you behind your back, and they put you into a squad car and book you on obstructing an officer.
You don't think that the judge would ever say what is your name and therefore enable this dialogue as it's seen? Of course, all...
Actually, no, they would. That's actually the next chapter. The next chapter is you appear in pajamas in court, you know, in your jail suit. Then the judge will say to you, as you stand in custody, sir, what is your name? Is this your true name? Are you Tom R?
No, it is not. What, are you Tom R?
Are you Tom R, sir?
I can't make a legal determination.
You can't make a legal determination. You don't know if your name is Tom R or not.
I can't make a legal determination concerning that name.
I see. Well, according to your fingerprints, you are Tom R. And
listen, Robert, would you just let me say two sentences?
Go for the two sentences.
It might explain. The two sentences are, your corporate entity is spelled all in capital letters. That is what you are accused under. The way the courts work is that your corporate entity is accused and convicted, and the natural individual goes to jail. Does that begin to show you? There are two Robert Norses. There are two Tom Revelles. One is the name spelled all in capital letters, which is a corporate entity. The other, and a legal fiction. It is the legal fiction that gets arrested, that gets convicted, that gets accused, and so on.
We got the allegation
out
here. Okay, Tom, this is as I said, this is what I regard as a theoretical approach to the situation, which I don't think is going
to
work.
Being able to complete the meaning of what I'm saying.
Yeah, it takes too long. We're at 25 minutes now. I'm sorry.
Damn it! You spent hours and hours and hours of you doing things and you recording.
This is all I want to spend on this, Tom. Take a minute and sum up, and then we're going to go. Go ahead.
There is a way to become the agent of your corporate entity, which basically frees you from the courts. And in order to do that, you have to learn a certain amount of law, and you have to. And that's what's in this book. That's it. You find out once you find out the difference between Robert Norse in capital letters, the legal difference, and the law that you're working under, and you realize that everything is an offer of contract, including every ticket you get, is an offer of contract, which you can refuse under the uniform commercial law with absolute commercial immunity. Okay? Once you learn that, you have a way to defend yourself and to declare your independence of this system entirely, including taxes,
15 seconds,
including
Tom.
Tickets, including everything. Okay? So I'm just saying, just call that number, read that book, and if anybody's interested, they can call me at 454-9392, and I'll be happy to go into this further.
Thank you, Tom. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And again, if you've missed any of those numbers, call 423-HUFF, and I'll put you in touch with Tom and give you that the 818 number. Now a little music as we take a breather. Actually, we got another call quickly. Let's do this. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
This is Doug. There's a lot of different theories, a lot of different books that say, that is possibly the reality of laws that they were intended in the beginning. But each city, their legal system works as the way that they believe it. And you're quite correct. He wouldn't make it past the jail or anything that he's doing. And in fact, they'd just keep him there until he told them what his name was. And, he'd be in contempt of court. A lot of the things he acted like. But, you can have B.E. Smith had his little thing. And it didn't work out for him either. He's in prison, like right now trying to get out. They convicted, I forgot his name, the marijuana dude in San Francisco.
Rosenthal.
Rosenthal, right. It was really the basis of whatever. It's the small legal system that they're working under with the lawyers and the prosecutors, and they all come to believe a certain thing in their little area, and that's the way the law works for them, and it's all pretty cut and dried.
There are possibilities about what can be done that haven't been tried. I don't deny that as a possibility, but I want to see it in operation. I want to at least role play it out and see what the probable prospect is. I wouldn't mind switching around roles and saying he can now be the judge and I'll try that approach. I'm not saying there isn't some remarkable new insight that we can't use or some arcane legal knowledge that we can't find, but to spend a lot of time elaborating it on the air until you've tried it or worked it out, I'm impatient because I've got stuff I want to do, and it's my show, goddammit.
Well, you've been also trying a lot of that stuff for many years, You're not unfamiliar with the...
Well, I've not tried the commercial code. I'll admit that,
Yeah, you have to make yourself a corporation.
The Norris Corporation, yes.
Yeah. And incorporate and,
I got to say that I recognize the voice. We're talking to the infamous Doug McGrath. And Doug, I can never get it, but is it McGrath or McGrath?
McGrath, T-H.
Yeah. You're a man who's been, you've been working on homeless civil rights issues and survival issues for at least a decade, and now you were hung up with some serious pneumonia in the hospital. Are you out? What's your situation?
I'm doing better. I'm off some of the drugs I had to take and everything, but I'm doing better. It's like I do a five-hour workout, with weights or something, as my muscles are all going back, because they disappeared. I was like, I didn't move for like 6-5 weeks. I didn't move. I was asleep and under a morphine dream, man. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. I believed it all when I woke up. Marilyn couldn't convince me it didn't happen. But anyway, that's what happened, and I circled the drain for about a month and a half, and I'm doing better now.
And where are you now?
But we're actually right down near the Lighthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a band playing. I'm not real sure what's happening. Looking at the Pacific off the cliffs, it's just really beautiful. You can take a canoe out there today. That's what living in paradise is like. It's awful expensive, though. Awful expensive. But I think the rates are too high, and people ought to just say no.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a rent strike all over town, no question about it.
Well, that's pretty much what we're doing. We had to move out of places where they doubled the rent, twice here. One place Marilyn lived for 15 years.
There's been some...
Or the Christian band playing over there.
There's been some, you know, some talk I've heard that rents have either stabilized or dropped. Have you heard anything about that?
You know, actually, there's a gentleman that was in the hospital with me. He had pneumonia, too. He came here from New Jersey, but he's well aware of Santa Cruz. He, you know, his family lives out here. He was under the impression that rents were going down and everything like that. But, you know, I don't know if you've heard. I've heard there's a college shutting down, and there could be 15,000 more students coming to UCSD in the future, like starting this year.
Yeah, I've heard that there's an upsurge. I don't know what the details are.
Some college shut down. Maryland could tell you more about it, because they've been, you know, briefed about it.
By the way, now that I've got you on the line, I know that Eric Seeley, Homeless Resource Center, Santa Cruz police officer, recently came up in a news story about the jailed African-American tarot reader Jason Pascal.
Oh, he did.
Jason was taken off the mall and is being held on a warrant, has been in jail for 2 weeks, and there's an interesting story, some of which Becky Johnson wrote, some of which I wrote, and I guess there's a story from the Chronicle.
I've read some stuff.
On the Indie Media website?
No, I'm not on the web right now, but I've been reading, you know, about it, listening to your show. I've been hearing it that way.
Well, I know that Seeley was involved in quoted in this whole issue, as you know, and I'm wondering, I know you had some problems with Seeley about 5 years ago, but has he gotten a better reputation since? Have you been in touch with Eric Seeley's rep among the homeless?
He didn't say anything to me, pretty much. Like, he was wrong, and we kind of caught him, so, and he knows that we'll go, you know, the distance on stuff. And he knows we're not problems. He pretty much, you know, I don't know if he's got a better reputation. I haven't had to mess with him at all. But, you know, he deals with problems. You know, the people are generally a problem. And that's just the way it is. You know, cut and dug. God dang it, I've been trying to work with him for years. And
well, I just know that at the camp,
terrifying to become just a problem.
You know, at the Camp Paradise situation, he was. I know that Larry Templeton and others felt he was very abusive and hostile, and I observed him in action and wasn't terribly impressed with how he dealt with people along the levee, how he dealt with the public.
I missed a lot of that. When I'm there, he's generally pretty.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to. I mean, it's important to give a fair, total picture of what a person is when they deal with numerous things. But I think it's also important to hold them responsible for their abusive behavior when that's the case. And some of that is abuse that comes from the sleeping ban law itself, but some of it is officer discretion. So I don't know. Anything
else
you want to say?
There's a lot of discretion. Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of discretion there, and police officers, you know, they do have a different belief than a lot of people in Santa Cruz. I don't know how they end up here. And same with the military there, I tell you. But anyway, yeah, I really think that, you know, the guy, you know, has an attitude that might work. But here in Santa Cruz, you know, he's going to have to take it up again, like with the Ninth Circuit or the, you know, the Supreme Court.
You're talking about the last caller now, huh?
Yeah, yeah. That's basically what I called about. Really.
Okay.
And, he's got another one of those theories, but, you know, B.E. Smith did, too. And they don't want to listen to those theories.
That's true. Although
they believe what they believe, and that's the way it is.
Yeah, B.E. Smith is the marijuana activist and also the helmet. Well, he was the activist to work with the Take Me to a Magistrate defense for vehicle code infractions, which I think actually has had some success both in other courts and also Santa Cruz. So he's been able to persuade the sheriff's deputies or force the sheriff's deputies and the Santa Cruz police to add an aspect to their form and a procedure for demanding you be taken to a magistrate for a probable cause hearing prior to being booked. And that's actually a new thing, and I saw it actually in operation for the first time when Becky Johnson did it when she was charged with chalking on the sidewalk last July.
Well, up in Shasta County, you know, who he was speaking with down there, they weren't real sure, and it does sound pretty convincing, and he's very convincing in his speech about it. So they weren't real sure, so they just didn't mess with it. But the feds came down on him and said, you know, do it.
Well, the feds had another issue. I mean, the feds' issue was that of medical marijuana, that it had no legitimacy, and what they were able to do was to intimidate the jury and use a judge to do that, as it was also done in San Francisco recently in the Rosenthal case.
Right.
Which is another indication of how bad it is to try to use the court system. The courts are really a really rigged deck. It's really hard to get. I mean, I was convicted of serving free food you know, in San Francisco in 1996. You would have thought one juror would have said, this is not worth a jail sentence for somebody. He's doing, you know, public service. Nobody's gotten hurt. It's actually a political deal, but that's not what we got.
I know. It's just amazing. It's just amazing. And actually being in court, you know, listening to it and watching the jury, you can tell that, you know, these guys are gonna do what he says. They're not gonna think about it in any other way. They're up there, like doing their duty, you know, raising their hand, and they're doing their duty for America, and they're gonna do it right. And God dang, and you know, this simple, real quick brainwashing.
It's a hard thing to stand up to a judge when you are in a jury. It's like you feel like you're a teacher in a class with the added fear that a judge has powers that a teacher never has.
Oh, he can put you in jail right there.
Yeah, a judge has powers that a police officer doesn't have.
Yeah.
A judge has control of police officers. He has an armed bailiff standing there by your side. So it's an intimidating situation, which what most people don't realize is that ultimately they do have control over the judge in some sense, although it could be, I mean, you have to be willing to look far down the road. Anything else, caller?
No, I thought, anyway, nice talking to you and everything. You know, keep it up and everything. Just keep doing what you're trying to do. Maybe experiment, you know, what the heck. You know, what can it get you? Just a few free meals and a cot, right?
yeah, three slops and a cot, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, have a good one, then.
Hey, thanks, caller.
Happy Easter.
Thanks, Doug. Bye-bye.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris, also known as Bathrobes Pierre Robert, for my tattered collection of bathrobes, which I occasionally would wear on the streets when people were being arrested for sleeping, myself included. I'm hearing some rumors that I let other people get arrested, but don't myself. This is not true. Frequently, it's I'm the one who gets arrested and other people don't. But, you know, I guess it depends who you talk to and when you're talking to someone, and it's not really a question of who gets arrested and who doesn't. It's really a question of how we can all effectively challenge and put these people back who are trying to use the threat of jail to get people essentially to follow orders. That's all the police seem to be looking for, is getting you to follow orders. It doesn't matter really what the orders are, as long as you follow them, and preferably smile as you do, and always be polite, that sort of thing. So, anyway, it's Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and here's a little Phil Oakes.
Come as close as the air, sharing a memory of gray, and wander in my words, dream about the pictures that I play of changes. Green leaves of summer turn red in the fall, to brown and to yellow they fade, and then they have to die, trapped within the circle time parade of changes. Scenes of my young years were warm in my mind, visions of shadows that shine, till one day I returned and found they were the victims of the vines of changes. The world spinning madly, it drifts in the dark, swings through a hollow of haze, a race around the stars, a journey changes. magic will glow in the night. All fears of the forest are gone, but when the morning breaks, they're swept away by golden drops of dawn, of changes. Passions will part to a strange melody, as fires will sometimes burn cold like petals in the wind. We're puppets to the silver strings of souls of changes. Your tears will be trembling now, we're somewhere else. One last cup of wine we will pour, and I'll kiss you one more time, and leave you on the rolling river shores of changes. So sit by my side, come as close as the air, share in a memory of gray, wander in my words, dream about the pictures that I play of changes.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris, and this is your chance to jump on board and say something about what you've heard or something about what you'd like to hear. I have no objection to trying novel new strategies, but I want to run them by the old potential responses and see how that works, and I think that's important to do. And I'm not trying to suggest that the first caller's approach might not be a very successful one. I just need to see, you know, a way to do that in a concrete sense. And that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. I'm not saying it doesn't. We do have a court case coming up on Wednesday. Many, 13 of us at least. The Capitola 13, as we're called. For those of you from the Capitola 13 who are listening, please call in and talk a bit if you'd like. The 13 are people who are arrested for standing in front of the military recruiting center. There actually are, I guess, different offices in the Capitola and 41st Avenue and Claire's. Is the place where it happened, more or less. And it was, I guess, a couple of weeks ago, almost a month ago now, when the war was either just started or it was about to start, and a number of people stood either near, in front of, or blocking the doorway of the one or several of the different stations. There's the Air Force, there's the Army, there's the... at least that's what they're charged with. And they're going to make a statement about that on Wednesday. They're going to talk about the war, talk about the occupation, talk about what we can do next to stop this and to get these troops back home, to get the men and women who are over there, who are still shooting civilians every so often, and getting shot as well, occupying a foreign country essentially as mercenaries of the Bush regime. That's really what they're doing. They aren't authorized by the UN. They're there in violation of international law, in violation of the Geneva Conventions. They've devastated Baghdad and other cities in terms of the water supply, in terms of the electricity, and they are being now significantly opposed by a renascent Shiite opposition, which is telling them to get the fuck out of there, as well as the six surrounding countries have had a meeting and said, we want you out of there. So they don't intend to get out of there. They, according to the latest Washington Post stories, maybe I should start doing a little reading of that now. The Washington Post and the LA Times, establishment press, not necessarily the best source to go to, but certainly, you know, a mainstream source in this Bush re-election war situation, is talking about that there are going to be at least 160,000 U.S. troops there for the next year in Iraq,
And even though they're going to cut back on troops in Turkey and Saudi Arabia, they will still maintain a significant military presence there. That's Rumsfeld's latest plan. That's at least according to the L.A. Times and the Washington Post. I kind of did some early morning reading I usually do around the war. I spend too much time with these establishment media, actually. There are better websites. You know, what you get on the established media are the puff pieces. Dr. Germ, the POWs coming home, we got Saddam's brother, that sort of thing. And then occasionally, you know, the Shiites are rebelling or standing up and protesting and saying, get the fuck out. But much of the time, it is just, you know, the glitter of the latest puffy story that the Pentagon puts out and that the establishment media faithfully parrots. The story today in the L.A. Times was that weapons inspectors are being dispatched by the U.S., and at the same time they're refusing to allow Blix and the U.N. inspectors back in, but the U.S. 1,000-plus experts will be sifting through records and interrogating prisoners. Not sure whether it's with or without benefit of the Geneva Conventions. And it'll take, surprise, a year to complete. So they wouldn't give the U.N. a month, but the U.S. is going to take a year to do this. I guess you could say, well, there's no danger they're going to use those weapons now because the U.S. is occupying the country. The Hussein regime is fled or dead. And I suppose that's an argument to be made, but it seems, again, it was an argument that wasn't accepted by all the other major powers in the world except Britain and by many of the other minor countries in the world, and it certainly wasn't accepted by the UN. Also, it was admitted, in fact, it was headlined, U.S. military units in Iraq have found no prohibited weapons since they invaded the country last month, although they have found gas masks, protective gear, and antidote kits, according to L.A. Times reporters Doyle McManus and Bob Drogan. Some say there are missteps in the military unit's initial searches of suspected weapon sites that may have unwittingly destroyed useful evidence. Rumsfeld, however, preening and parading as usual, says, the United Nations inspectors didn't find anything, and I doubt that we will. Now he's citing the fact that they didn't find anything as a justification for the U.S. not finding anything. What we will do is we'll find the people who will tell us. It's going to take time to find anything because they buried things. They used underground tunnels, and they took the documentation. Of course, none of this is documented yet, but if Donald Rumsfeld says it, then the media says it must be worth broadcasting and not challenging. Blix said last week he was ready to put a team of U.N. inspectors back in Iraq within 2 weeks, according to this L.A. Times story in today's L.A. Times. I think that the world would like to have a credible report on the absence or eradication of the program of weapons of mass destruction, he told the BBC. The Bush administration, however, says it's too early for U.N. inspectors to return to Iraq and expresses little interest in Blix's services. Quote, this seems to be the week of voluntarism on the part of people who say they are willing to get rid of Iraqi weapons that they weren't willing to admit were there before, a senior U.S. official said. Actually, of course, this is a complete distortion. They didn't say they were there. In fact, they didn't say they weren't there. They said they were looking for them in all cases. And, of course, now we have even Rumsfeld saying that they may not be there. They may be hidden. We have to find them. Maybe they'll get some torture warrants from Alan Dershowitz to go after the Baghdad people, the Iraqi former Hussein officials, so they can torture the information out of them. Other stories, and there's a story by Laura King, Double Duty for Marines in Baghdad, again from the L.A. Times. The old men playing dominoes barely looked up from their tiny steaming cups of coffee as the U.S. Marines arrived to search for weapons in a dim and smoky coffee house in one of the city's main markets. But a few heads turned when a small cache of AK-47 assault rifles were dragged from beneath the soot-stained brick oven and several bulging sacks of ammunition and Iraqi dinars came to light in a back storeroom. Accompanied by a small contingent of Iraqi police, half a dozen Marines had fanned out Saturday through the market's winding covered alleyways, part of a long and dusty day's patrol that combined goodwill gestures with a state of hair-trigger readiness for urban combat. The day's mission was to search for illicit weapons in a part of Baghdad where U.S. troops had not previously ventured on foot, a crowded, run-down district where gunfire still crackled in the near distance. In another, looted weapons were being sold in a bazaar. In other words, at the same time that they're looking for weapons, the weapons that have been looted when the Marines essentially allowed the looters to do what they want are being sold. It's amusing that you get this at the same time. I admit I myself have a bias here. I find the U.S. occupation repugnant, and it tends to color my judgment. So I'm in a position where we have an incoming call here. I'll get that in a moment. I'm in a position where I criticize that the shrines being looted, but I also criticize soldiers acting as cops, because soldiers aren't really cops. Soldiers have a different mission than police. You know, I criticize bringing back the old police from the Hussein regime, but then I criticize letting the city fall into chaos. So I've got some contradictions in my position, too. I've got to work out. Looks like we have an incoming call. Are you still there, caller? Looks like you may have given up. Call back, and we'll put you on the air. I'm sorry that we missed you. Got to keep a closer eye on that blinking phone light. Another thing that I noted, in the same story, soldiers and private zoos. Well, first let's go to the public zoo here. Let's see what we got. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Well, Robert, how are you?
I'm good.
I thought I would get international a little bit with you this morning. What do you make of the Castro crackdown of April 7th?
Oh, tyrants and totalitarians always crack down. You know how it is.
Well, I mean, Castro is a very suave figure here in Santa Cruz. Didn't Almquist go to Cuba recently to celebrate Castro's retention of power?
I didn't make that one, but somebody may have.
And others in Santa Cruz regularly tout the glory of Fidel.
Well, you know, he's an ambivalent figure for some, because he has cracked down on gays, and you see him now cracking down on political dissidents.
Well, you think it's the first time he's cracked down on dissidents?
No.
No, I mean, you don't dissent in Castro. You agree with that, don't you?
What's that?
You don't dissent in Cuba.
That there's no dissent in Cuba?
You don't dissent in Cuba.
Well, you risk going to jail for dissenting, that's for damn sure.
Or getting shot.
Yeah, or getting shot, although I don't know if he shot people recently for
dissenting.
On April
7th, a kangaroo court, now that's being subjective.
Tell me again?
On April 7th, a kangaroo court handed down prison sentences of up to 28 years.
Right, but I'm saying I don't know that he shot anybody lately. I mean, I'm not saying that it's any less onerous to be in jail for 27 years, but I was asking about the specific shooting thing. I hadn't heard about that.
I try to get a grip on the politics of the community. Santa Cruz likes to throw its weight around internationally, and Cuba is on the favorite list of many of the international flautists here in town. And what about Fidel?
Well, you know the story. The reason that Fidel is considered a hero by many, and I have a soft side for Fidel too, is that he did set up health and medical services and housing for people in ways that are the envy of countries throughout Latin America. And he also dealt with an independence. He established independence from the U.S. And those are two things I think that people admire about him. What I don't admire about him, and I'm sure what you don't admire about him, is the police-state stuff.
Did he have to be a dictator to do those things?
That's the question. I would hope not. I would think that if the people rise...
And can't Almquist and the others look at Fidel Castro as a rather ruthless dictator who does not take opposing points of view kindly? Why is that always put off at the side?
Well, I don't put it to the side. I put it up there, but I think you also want to say that all the other dictators that the U.S. supports need also to be given the same whacking. And I don't hear you whacking them much, Bob.
I don't dispute that.
Okay, well, whack them a little bit for me, will you?
Name one. Name one and I'll whack them for you.
Okay, well, I mean, I want you to call in and whack them, man.
What do you want? Indonesia, what do they call it, Myanmar, whatever it's called?
Oh, Myanmar, yeah.
Myanmar, I mean, you could name list after list of ruthless despots.
No, the Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan and
for that matter,
Uzbekistan.
For that matter, China.
And China, definitely, yeah.
Okay. So I say,
what about our local Führer, Emily Riley?
Let's play it across the board. As I expressed before, Robert, I do not think you give due consideration to these folks. I don't happen to agree with a lot of their positions, neither. I think when it gets down to some of the local issues that need to be dealt with in terms of abuse of power, I don't see any of them coming forth. But certainly these folks make an honorable attempt at some of the local issues of importance, including homelessness.
Wait a minute now. Hold it. What has Emily Riley done that's honorable around the homeless issue? Please, one thing.
You know, most of these folks, when they get into office, they float trial balloons. I think even Ed Porter tried to float a trial balloon of parking zones. And what happens is they get shot down by neighborhood groups, and I think understandably so. It's a difficult pickle. And there's also issues regarding health codes for a lot of these situations.
No. Back up, bud.
What you're not looking at is
Wait a minute. Back up. Let's go back to that issue about Ed Porter. I mean, let's be specific here. I mean, you're gonna, let's consider it. Ed Porter has never proposed a parking zone. He did propose for Camp Paradise, what was initially a resettlement area, which he abandoned. There was the depot site, other places, and indeed there was some opposition from some neighborhood groups. But the fact of the matter is, it seems to me that Ed's been around for a dozen years. He knows there's going to be opposition. He doesn't bring it up in a vacuum. You either come forward and you're prepared to support these proposals knowledgeably, or you don't bring them up at all.
I don't think that's what we have here locally, and I don't think that's really ever been the case, Robert. And I think that's where I would have a basic disagreement.
He was pandering to the left here. He was screwing around, as far as I'm concerned.
Where you and I might agree is the methodology of groups like SCAN. It's about winning and retaining power.
Yep.
It's not about a principled position in an issue where you might go down in flames.
And by the way, we may have a report from SCAN, which had its, annual meeting last Thursday. I'm hoping to get Thomas Levitt to report on that. We can get some updates. But, you know, this business about the Emily Riley and Ed Porter honest and sincere, to me, is really hogwash.
Oh, it really is. This is where I think...
You got to give me particulars,
Bob. I have...
The fact that they're nice to you and that they're courteous... You know, the fact that they're courteous and nice to you as an individual has nothing to do with whether they're honorable on the issues. It really doesn't.
My limited experience with Ms. Riley and Mr. Porter...
Well, give me specifics, please.
Says to me that they make the attempt, they try, they do
their
best.
True.
They put a lot of effort into the job, and they deserve to be applauded for that effort.
You know, I'm going to ask my producer to call Emily Riley and Ed Porter and invite them to call in and please let us know what honorable efforts they've made. And frankly, I don't think we're going to get a call. And I'll even suggest that they call you and tell you what honorable efforts they have made.
If my memory is correct, and
yes.
Maybe it is not, but I do recall Mr. Porter attempting to at least look into the idea of some kind of parking zones that might work for homeless people.
Parking zones.
Right?
You know,
that long ago, a couple of years ago.
Well,
what happens with this kind of stuff is they come up against neighborhoods, they come up against health issues.
You know, well, I know what happens is they come up against staff and they come up against Fitzmaurice. But the problem here is that Porter got elected committing himself to act immediately on the sleeping ban, even if he wouldn't get anywhere. And he did absolutely nothing. He tried to put it on the agenda once. Fitzmaurice said no. And Porter subsided beneath the waves without a gurgle.
Well,
so I'm sorry. That's a violation of a campaign promise. That's not honorable. That's not a good effort. No, it doesn't go.
You don't have revolutionaries.
It's not a revolutionary. It's a person willing to fulfill their campaign promise. That's all.
It's what happens is that people begin to see they have political capital and they're not willing to rock.
Gag me, man. Now you don't want to sound like Keith Sugar there, Bob.
I just want to say that I think that there's some appropriate applause and lauding that should be directed towards, I think, all of the council, by the way.
You keep saying that, but I'm looking for particulars.
I think that Fitzmaurice, these guys, they try. They do their best.
Give me particulars. Tell me what Fitzmaurice has done. Fitzmaurice had a chance to change the sleeping ban. He voted with Byers and with Rotkin and with Rodriguez, Hernandez, to say no.
Isn't there a $5 million addition to the homeless shelter going to be...
They've been trying to fundraise for a family shelter, which has been Byers' pet project for the last 7 years, which is very nice for a small number of homeless people.
That's something, Robert. I mean, applaud it.
It has nothing to do with the majority of homeless people, man.
Credit where credit's due. And also...
There's no opposition to that. It is one of these little programs that's a little kind of, you know, given. It's never been controversial. No, I'm not going to give them significant credit for that. They don't. They didn't have to fight to do it.
Wasn't it Riley and Porter that led the Danton ordinances, the recent round of ordinances?
You got it.
And weren't those ordinances brought about by irascible behavior?
No. Those ordinances were brought about by the desire of the police department to have their anti-musician campaign covered with legal cover.
You've never talked then to a merchant or a woman that's been harassed walking down Pacific.
I have, and I've talked to plenty of people who've been harassed by the police, too. But what I'm telling you is that the answer to those problems was already on the books. And the answer to those problems also involved the community dialogue that Porter and Riley mendaciously, falsely, and deceptively indicated that they were starting. What they actually did was they rammed through city council in the course of a month, four city council sessions, the only time I've ever seen that in my history in Santa Cruz, with laws that criminalize 95% of the sidewalk for poor people if they want to sit down.
Should Hacky Sack be allowed to be played on Pacific Avenue?
Sure.
No.
Sure.
Come on. Right.
No, Hacky Sack is not a menace. Armed police officers marching up and down harassing people in Ashcroftian America, that is a menace. Hacky Sack is not a menace. Show me one lawsuit, Bob, where Hacky Sack has caused any injuries to anyone.
It's not a question of injuries.
Yes, it is.
Getting to that point, it's a question of the harassment and the blocking of the thoroughfare and just the plain nastiness and selfishness.
You know, I disagree with you on that.
What happens is so-called progressive communities like Santa Cruz find themselves backed up against a wall where they have to enact these kinds of...
Bob, they did not have to enact that. This was merchant hysteria is what it was.
Hacky Sack should be allowed to be played on Pacific Avenue.
Hacky Sack, first of all, wasn't played much on Pacific Avenue. And where it was played, you know, it wasn't a big problem. Yeah, occasionally people complained. Big deal. You know, police were giving people tickets for blocking the sidewalk, and that was deterring the infamous criminal Hacky Sack element. I mean, come on, Bob. You are a reasonable person. I don't understand. Has a Hacky Sacker bothered you?
I'm trying to be reasonable from a moderate point of view, which is that people...
You got to be careful with this moderate point of view stuff. You know, in the McCarthy area, it became moderate to ban some teachers. Thank you very much. I don't want to be that kind of a moderate.
People other than gothics and hoodlums want to walk down Pacific Avenue with peace.
That's kind of a smear, Bob, when you call people hoodlums. You know, people who are Hacky Sack. If you're calling Hacky Sackers hoodlums, I think that is quite a stretch.
All right. People being impolite. Okay.
Well, I know you're big on politeness, but, you know, there's a thing called polite fascism, which Fitzmaurice is very much aware of. It has to do with decorum at city council, where the politeness involves elimination of the First Amendment at the discretion of the city council.
You know, every now and then I will tune in the Santa Cruz City Council meetings, maybe once every couple of months, and watch the parade of people doing their, oral communication.
Doing their impressions of citizens, right.
It's at best... hysterical, really.
You know, that's fine, Bob, but that's not what most of the that's not what most of the city council is about. Most of the city council has nothing to do with the public.
They have to sit there and listen to those attacks.
Gosh.
I think in and of itself deserves some applause.
Look, Bob, which is worse, listening to people attack you for 1.5 hour every 2 weeks or having to watch the city council destroy civil liberties the rest of the time, which is about 7 or 8 hours of city council rubber-stamping staff proposals?
Well,
I think that's a much more serious question. And listening, I don't like Michael Tomasi's fuck you, fuck this, fuck that. And I'm not particularly enamored of that.
I think what you got
But that's not the point. The point is, what is the city council doing?
What you got in Santa Cruz is you have elected politics that likes to throw their weight around 3,000 miles away because it's safe. But they're not going to rock the boat here because what really counts here, and I don't disagree with it, is property values. And to me, what the city council should do more of is economic development incentives.
Mm. Yeah, I understand, and I think your assessment is accurate there. I don't know about the economic, and I don't know what the best way for economic development is, but I think we're talking human development too.
I don't see Santa Cruz promoting itself over the hill, which would be very natural to attract business here, which to me should be done if it's done at all. It should be stepped up considerably. there's nothing wrong with acknowledging the fact that we need an economic base here.
You know, I don't know if the only way to proceed is to, you know, start selling clumps of the city and the town to the, you know, the business that's going to bring in the biggest tax base. I don't. To me, there's got to be a different way.
It's not only tax base. It's a question of economic base and jobs, Robert, and
well,
money.
That too. I mean, you know, the Seaside Company gives lots of shit jobs. What are we going to do? Give away more of you know, Lee Brandt Street to the Seaside Company? I mean, I don't buy that.
That's not necessarily what we'd be talking about. Were we to attract high tech employers here to Santa Cruz?
High-tech, I don't know. I mean, high-tech isn't... I guess high-tech is still happening, but not to the extent it was.
Not in our lifetime.
Yeah.
And I think one of the dilemmas here, if I might be so bold, is most of the politics is so insulated, because most of it is directly related to UC Santa Cruz, with the exception of PREMAC, that they're myopic. They don't really have a view of economic reality. And or the community needs, other than they won't rock the boat because they know full well that property values reign supreme.
Well, we got to rock the boat, and I agree with you on that one, and I want to thank you for calling, Bob. You want to sum up?
I occasionally listen to your show, and I find you interesting, Robert. I find myself defending you in many ways, because what it is you're the few people, persons that I know that actually stands up for some of the more difficult local issues.
And attacking me as well.
I do think you do rant excessively and not give due regard to these folks that are dedicating a lot of their personal time to a very, very difficult position.
I'm dedicating a lot of my personal time, and it sounds like you're dedicating some of your personal time. I'm glad about that too, Bob, and thank you for calling.
You bet. Robert, take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Santa Cruz.